So we're reading, continuing Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 9, and we'll be reading verses 69-72. Which one's on the board? Is it 69 that's on the board? 72's on the board? Okay. At Bakshi Tirtha, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Lord Shiva. Then he went to the Riddha Kola place of pilgrimage. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, Bakshi Tirtha, also known as Tirukari Kundam, is located 9 miles southeast of Chimlipat. It has a 500-foot elevation and is situated in a chain of hills known as Vedagiri or Vedachalam. There is a temple of Lord Shiva there, and the deity is known as Vedagirishvara. Two birds come there daily to receive food from the temple priest, and it is claimed that they have been coming since time immemorial. Om Gyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitamena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Saprantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpaturubhischa Kripa Sindhu Abhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadi Gaura Vattavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Okay, so I'm going to go back to verse 69 and read on from there. So verse 69, the Lord then visited a holy place known as Vishnukanchi. There he saw Lakshmi Narayan deities and he offered his respects and many prayers to please them. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed at Vishnukanchi for 2 days, he danced and performed kirtan in ecstasy. When all the people saw him, they were converted into devotees of Lord Krishna. After visiting Trimalaya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to see Trikalahasti. There he saw Lord Shiva and offered him all respects and obeisances. Trikalahasti, or Sri Kalahasti, is situated about 22 miles east of Tirupati. On its western side is a river known as Suvarnamukhi. The temple of Trikalahasti is located on the southern side of the river. The place is generally known as Sri Kalahasti or Kalahasti and is famous for its temple of Lord Shiva. There he is called Vayu Linga Shiva. And then verse 72, at Bakshi Tirtha, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Lord Shiva. Then he went to the Vriddha Kola place of pilgrimage. I want to read the purport again just because it's so short. Bakshi Tirtha, also known as Tirukadi Kundam, is located 9 miles southeast of Chimlipat. It has a 500-foot elevation and is situated in a chain of hills known as Vedagiri or Vedachalam. There is a temple of Lord Shiva there, and the deity is known as Veda Girishwar. Two birds come there daily to receive food from the temple priest, and it is claimed that they have been coming since time immemorial. Is there anyone here who's coming to the temple for the first time or morning class for the first time? No? Okay. So we can speak freely. Not that we don't speak freely. We speak freely. We have a nice culture in that sense, right? We can freely ask questions or we can speak freely. So the ninth chapter of the Madhya Lila, Lord Chaitanya is making his tour of South India. And as he's making this tour of South India, he's doing so for many reasons. The Lord had many reasons to do anything and everything. And even more reasons as Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya isn't just driven by the Ichha Shakti or the desire Shakti of Lord Krishna, but he's also driven by the desire Shakti of Radharani. So he's driven by this devotional potency. And so there's many, many, many layers, and I'm just going to speak on a few of them. Maybe even on just one or two, because there's so many. and I'm only aware of a few of them. So as we study and we look at Lord Chaitanya's activities, wherever he goes, but particularly in South India, entering this particular section of the Madhya Lila, as he enters and travels around South India, he is quite literally, as we've heard in verse 70, he's changing the hearts of those who reside in the region of South India and attracting them to pure devotional service, bhakti, a loving relationship with God. See, India was full of religious people at the time that Lord Chaitanya came, but religious by ritual, not so much religious by relationship. And so when Lord Chaitanya came to South India, and wherever he went, he was, through his activities and through his logic, reasoning, through his words, through his preaching, through Harinam Sankirtan, he was changing people's hearts from religion to relationship. This is what he was doing. So this is one of the things he was doing in South India. And you'll hear as the weeks progress, the different ways in which he did this. I won't go into all of them because I'm sure other devotees will cover them. So, for example, impersonalists, changing their hearts to pure devotional service, defeating Buddhist philosophy, which is atheistic, quite different. A lot of people don't realize that Buddhism is not a theistic religion. It's an atheistic religion. It's very much to do with control and mastery of the mind, the senses, nullification of karma. And then there's this idea of, you know, freedom from the cycle of birth and death. So Lord Chaitanya was there to build on that. Buddhism plays an important role. Lord Buddha spoken about in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's one of the Dasavatara. He comes with a particular purpose to move people away from the exploitation of Vedic principles. Because when you have powerful principles and you exploit them, they are powerfully dangerous. And so better to stay away from the powerful, better to stay away from the power tools and play with the safe ones until you know how to use them properly, right? So now Lord Chaitanya has come to say, okay, well now let's get back to the power tools of spirituality. Let's reestablish a loving relationship. So this is one of the things he does through his travels of South India, changing the hearts of those who reside in South India to move them from religion to relationship. The second thing, and this is particularly where you see this, in this group of verses that we're reading now, you know, many of the verses and purports are very short because it's describing how Lord Chaitanya is visiting many different temples. And overall, if we see that most of the temples he's visiting are temples of Lord Shiva and also temples of Lord Ram. But there's a couple of things. There's a few things going on here with this mood of visiting temples. You think, okay, well, this is God. Why does God need to visit temples? See, and I'll elaborate this on this more. I just want to go through the brief points first. As Lord Chaitanya travels through and visits these various temples, you know, Radha Krishna have come in the form of a devotee to teach us how to be devotees in a loving relationship. But they carry with them the maximum potency of God And within him, Lord Chaitanya carries him not just the maximum potency of God, but the maximum potency of devotion. And so what happens is when the Lord comes before the deity, it reactivates the potency of the deities in the various temples. Reactivates the potency of the deities in the various temples. And we know this from Srila Prabhupada. He actually speaks about how, you know, this the mindset of the Smartha Brahmin. Smartha Brahmin means Brahmin or priest by birth. There's no real training or qualification, but there can be this sense of ownership. Well, you know, I'm a Brahmin, I'm a priest, and where we have a sense of ownership, then there's a sense of over-familiarity, possession, and often neglect. And so he describes how often you'll see in these temples, and you may even see these kinds of temples around India if you've been there. The temple's not so clean, the deity's not so taken care of. And maybe when you visit there, you struggle to connect. Maybe you struggle a little bit more to connect. So the quality or the potency of the Lord's presence in the deity is very much dependent on the worshipper, but it's also very much dependent on the person taking darshan as well, right? The person observing, the person coming to see the Lord. And with Lord Chaitanya having the maximum potency of God as well as the maximum potency of the devotee, his presence reactivated the potency of these various deities of Lord Shiva, of Vishnu, of Lord Ram. And as a result, re-established and reactivated deity worship in its proper form throughout the temples of South India. Because if you think about it, when we move around temples, where are we most inspired to go and visit? Where we feel a connection, right? Or where are we most inspired to go and do service? Where we feel a connection. We get inspired to learn more. How do I perform deity worship? How can I do it better? How can I connect more deeply? Because I see it works here. I come here and I don't just see statues, or I come here and I don't feel empty and at loss. I come here and I feel connected. And you may find this in various temples, both based on your mood and the standard of worship there. And then last but not least, in terms of some of the things we're discussing, is his own pleasure. His own pleasure. You know, one of the primary reasons for Krishna coming in Srimati Radharani's mood is that he gets to experience this unique pleasure of Srimati Radharani's as the topmost devotee. What is the ecstasy of being the devoted one? What is the joy of being completely surrendered? And also Srimati Radharani gets her voice to speak everything she wants to say, but has to keep quiet and to herself in her Vrindavan pastimes. And so actually Lord Chaitanya visiting all the various temples serve as udipans for his own. Udipan is like a catalyst, right? A stimulant for his own ecstasies. And, you know, of course, he's that prema with no effort. And so everything serves as a udipan. Sometimes we read of Lord Chaitanya just seeing a hill in the distance and reminds him of Govardhan Hill. And he runs madly in love. Where is my Krishna? Where is my Madhusudana? You know, deity worship is such an integral part of what Srila Prabhupada has given us. See, when we turn away from a relationship, this is something I've been meditating on a lot for the last, you know, few weeks, and in my own life, in my own practice, trying to go a little bit more deeper with, is this principle of when we turn away from a relationship, we often think first, okay, let me forget the person that I'm turning away from. And we do what we can to forget them. We may remove them from our life, we may block them on the phone, we may delete emails, erase photographs. Some of you may have had this misfortune either with your family or friends or partners, that you've been forced in a position where you have to forget them, or you've chosen to forget them. But nevertheless, no matter what you do, you're still haunted. What are you haunted by? You're haunted by memories of the relationship. Maybe you don't want to forget them, but you've been forced to forget them in one sense, or you think you have to forget them because maybe they've left their bodies. but again, you're either haunted or mesmerized by memories of them. And why do those memories continue? Because you were also there. We were also there in those relationships. So we have memories of the relationships and our experience. So when we turn away from Krishna, when we turn away from home, he ensures that in order to serve us properly, he makes this turning away watertight. How does he do this? So we forget him, but he makes sure that we forget ourselves and we forget our relationship with him also. All three things. And this very much lines up with our philosophy and our process of Abhideya, Prayojana and Sambandha. Understanding who am I, who is Krishna and the relationship. Why? Because those are the very three things that have had to be covered over in order for us to really be able to come here. Because when you leave a sweet person, a beautiful person, an unconditionally loving relationship, the only way to not be haunted by that is to completely forget yourself as well. And this service mood that Krishna has of, okay, well, if you really want to forget me, I have to make it watertight in my service to you, comes from him being the embodiment, actually, of humility. We were reading this yesterday. We were studying the 46th chapter of the 10th canto when Uddhav goes to Vrindavan and carries a message from Krishna to the residents of Vrindavan. And this is covered in two chapters. 46 covers his arrival in Vrindavan and his meeting with Nanda Maharaj and the familial associates of Krishna. And then the 47th chapter goes into his meeting with the gopis. So in chapter 46, Uddhav is trying to console Nanda Maharaj, who is distraught and distressed and disinterested and depressed by not having Krishna around. And so to cheer him up, he starts to help Nanda Maharaj come out of emotion to philosophy, and he starts to preach the glories, the godly-like glories of Lord Krishna. And one of the things he describes is this word that we often hear in Lord Chaitanya's instructions in the third verse of Shikshastakam. He uses this word phrase, amanina, right? Amanina, without respect. And he explains to Nanda Maharaj how Krishna does not expect any respect and yet is willing to offer all respects to others. And so we see this in Lord Chaitanya's example of going on pilgrimage, but we also see this in the way Krishna serves us so nicely in his role when we ask him, look, I want to forget you and I want to enjoy separately. But at the same time, out of his loving humility, he makes sure that he's never far away. Can we close that door, please? He makes sure that he's never far away, and he gives us many, many avenues with which to reconnect with him. See, this is the thing with not expecting any respect and offering all respects to others, is that because Krishna has this quality perfectly, he is able to adjust the boundaries of that depending on what his role and function is, based on which lila he is in, so which avatar he is, what his role is in that avatar, but also in the kind of dynamic he has with his devotee. So for example, with Sudama Brahmin, his friend, you know, he accepts respect from his friend, and love, but he also offers him respect and love. He washes his feet, even though he's the king, he's the prince. Sudama Brahmin, he's a Brahmin, but he's also impoverished, he's poor. So Krishna adjusts this quality of, he's the perfect example of this quality of not expecting any respect and not yet offering all respects to others, because he has no attachment to a particular varna or ashram or particular designation or particular avatar he comes in or a particular type of rasa. He can adjust in a very unique and individual way. So in this way, he embodies perfect humility. We get caught up in, oh, you know, hang on a minute, but where's the boundary? You know, if I'm too humble, maybe somebody will walk all over me and I'll become a doormat, and then I'll have low self-esteem, and then I won't feel empowered. And why? Because we adjust these parameters based on our various roles, because our various roles in this world and relationships still define us to a particular degree. When humility fully manifests, and when our love for Krishna fully manifests, or as both of them manifest more and more, they're very integrated, then the adjustment is fluid. Because the main thing that drives all our boundaries is, I am your servant. Okay, this is Krishna's mood. His heart beats to, I am your servant. I am your servant is his mood with, whether it's Madhurya Ras, whether it's Vatsalya, whether it's Sakya Ras, whether he is the recipient of servitude. In Dasya Ras, he has servants, all neutrality. He is always thinking, I am at your service. So with this mood of, I am at your service, that's pure love. So when our humility fully manifests, it's synchronized with also when our love fully manifests. But whilst we are in these bodies and we have these various designations, it will always be a challenge to kind of find that boundary of, okay, well, how do I get the balance right between expecting a certain amount of respect and offering it back? For example, parents, right? I'm your servant. With your child, if you have that too much, your child, you know, don't set any boundaries at all, then you don't do your service as a parent, because a parent's service is to lay down some boundaries. So I just wanted to reflect on this, just that, you know, everything that Krishna does for us, both to make us forget him, but also to give us so many ways to connect with him, are signs of his humility, which are tied into love. So let's just take this process of deity worship. Deity is very different to idol. We understand this, we know this through practical reasons. In terms of shastrically, deity is made to exacting standards. Deities are not made in a form which is based on the whimsical desires of our mind. Oh, I want Krishna to look pink today, or I want him to be red today, or I think, you know, Varahadev actually, you know, he didn't have tusks. I think I'm going to, you know, give him a bow on his head. You know, we don't make it up. We go according to scripture. And then there's empowered servants who also, they are empowered to carve and make the deity. And, you know, if you watch how people make deities, how these devotees who service, it's been handed down generation to generation. They chant mantras, they have a very exacting process. It's a real meditation. It's a real meditation. So the deity is like a portal. It's a portal to not just the spiritual world, but it is a personal representation of the Lord in this world. And it serves as a reminder of his form. So we see on the altar, you know, where our eyes can't see the transcendental form of the Lord, where our mind cannot conjure up a transcendental form of the Lord. The eyes can very easily see Srimati Radharani, Lord Krishna, his beautiful feet, his flute. You see Lord Ramachandra, Srimati Sita Devi, Lord Lakshman, and Hanuman, and Gornithai. You know, our eyes can very easily see. We don't have to imagine. I remember Bhakti Devata Maharaj doing an interview with, we used to have, I don't know if it's still around, there used to be a Asian newspaper called Eastern Eye. I don't know if it's still around. Do you remember back in the day? So he did an interview with them, and they asked him, you know, there's this challenging question often put to devotees, have you seen Krishna? Have you seen Krishna face to face? You know, like if you haven't seen Krishna face to face, then this is all basically airy-fairy and how do we know it's true? And the person asked him the question three times and he answered the same every single time. He says, yes, I see Krishna every single day on the altar playing his flute. And so can you. You know, this person was waiting for some mystical answer. Now, let's just say, Marge has seen Krishna face to face every single day, actually with transcendental vision. Even if you were to tell a journalist or anybody else, yes, I've seen Krishna face to face. First of all, actually it makes, unless that person also has the ability to see Krishna face to face, then it's still just they have faith in what you've said. It's still faith. It's not a fact, right? That's why one could even lie and say, yes, I see Krishna, I'm walking around, Krishna's in front of me, Krishna's next to me, Krishna's behind me, Krishna's... One could lie and get followers, right? Because again, people are putting their faith. So this kind of, this actually having the deity is a very, again, watertight. Yes, I see Krishna every day on the altar playing his flute. And you can see him too. Let's relate. So we get this, Krishna gives us this opportunity to remember. So considering that, he has had to make us forget who he is, forget who we are, and forget our relationship. He says, okay, but when you're ready, to remember again, here I am. You can start remembering my form. Even though it's covered for now, you can start to remember my form. And then also the activities of deity worship. Align our body to the activities that we do in the spiritual world. We look at the different paraphernalia of what's offered in deity worship. It all aligns with the activities of the gopis, of the gopas, of the older gopis and gopas, and the residents of Goloka Dham. You know, Sri Radharaman Prabhu is a pandit and pujari. I mean, actually, years and years and years ago, before we were even initiated, he was actually the person I phoned and said, hey, you know, I've got Gorin Thai. Can you tell me how to worship them? And he taught me in 5 minutes on the phone. He was so good. Really good. But actually, he instilled also not just the... There's the, you know, earth, air, fire, water, but also in terms of what these different articles represent. And then we have so many scriptures and books, and Srila Prabhupada himself also describes how, you know, in our Mangal Arati prayers, we are reading about how the spiritual master follows in the footsteps of the Manjaris and the Gopis, and how these various activities of offering flowers, offering fragrances, dressing Radharani, dressing Krishna, playing musical instruments. Why do we have kirtan during Arati? Because the spiritual world is vibrating and moving to the sound vibration of our singing. Singing the Lord's glory, singing the Lord's name. It's vibrating to the vibration of our footsteps, of the dancing of the residents of Vrindavan. You know, when Uddhav comes to Vrindavan, on the one hand, we hear everybody's really depressed, but that's not what Uddhav sees. Because Krishna wants Uddhav to see what Vrindavan is like when he's there, because he really wants him to understand prema bhakti, because Brihaspati has not been able to teach Uddhav this. It's not so easily available at that time, prema bhakti. So Krishna wants him to see it through the residence of Vrindavan. And so his Ichha Shakti is facilitated by Yoga Maya. His desire is facilitated by Yoga Maya. And so when Uddhav arrives, he sees that, you know, everybody's so happy and lively, and they're singing and they're dancing and they are singing songs about Krishna while they're churning butter, and the calves and the cows are galloping around, and, you know, the men and women and children, they're just so happy and delighted. And so the entire spiritual world is actually filled with the same activities we do when we're performing puja. Okay, now we may have, okay, we have to go around the deity 7 times and then, you know, 4 to the feet, 2 to the waist, 3 to, you know, we may get caught up in the technicalities. But actually, as technicality, the ritual of any process of devotional service, and particularly deity worship, as that starts to become habit, okay, as that becomes practice, habit, and then nature, then the relationship aspect manifests much more. You know, well, what's the mood behind the way I offer my incense and my flowers and the key lamp and the water, okay, and the cloth and the chamara and the peacock fan? How about when the arati is going on, when I'm singing? What am I thinking about? Why am I singing? Who am I singing to? So deity worship allows us to align and have a dedicated time, regardless of what our varna is and what our ashram is and whatever activities and different services we're offering throughout the day, because any service is a process of worship and a portal to connecting with Krishna. Deity worship allows us that very important designated time to bring our activities in line with our real activities, our material physical activities with the activities of the soul. It allows us also to worshipping the Lord in his Archa Vigraha, allows us to also bring the mind, word and heart. Okay, mind, words and heart to the language and intimacy that we have in our relationship with Krishna. You know, it was really nice. There's so much in every chapter of, you know, yesterday. So just going back to this chapter yesterday, it describes how, you know, Krishna, he holds Uddhav's hand and takes him to a quiet place and says, you know, I really want you to go to Vrindavan, you know, and give them a message from me. And there's such intimacy there. There's such sweetness that actually when we are engaged in deity worship or we are coming before the deity, this is a very intimate time for everybody. It's an intimate time for all of us where we can, using the power of prayer, that's what prayer is, reveal our mind in confidence to the Lord. I know I've made this point before, but I can't emphasize it enough, that the Lord knows what's going on in our heart anyway, right? He knows. He's closer to us than our breath. He's residing within us. He knows. And he's observing and he's responding. But when we pray, when we come before him and pray, whether we're meditating on the deity in the mind or coming before the deity externally, we are consciously choosing to reveal our mind in confidence. And there's a difference. There's a difference between observing something about someone and becoming aware of it, and them actually coming to you and volunteering that information or that heartfelt thought. And the difference is, one deepens relationship, right? So we can observe so many things about each other. We're often not able to do so much about it. There's a limitation to how much we can do about it because we haven't been asked, we haven't been invited to intervene. But the minute someone comes and says, hey, you know, I need help with this, or you're so wonderful, or I appreciate you, or you could do this better, or you're already doing this great. We may have already observed they feel like that about us, but when they come to us, then relationship begins or relationship is nurtured. So deity worship isn't just about getting the arati over and done with. it's not just about sticking to a schedule and keeping things clean. It's also a very big role is to help us to develop these intimate conversations with the Lord. And, you know, I use this phrase, the ritual aspect and the relationship aspect. I don't want to minimize or undermine the ritual aspect. The word ritual can leave one with a bad taste in the mouth because we live in a modern era where we don't like rules and we all want to be independent. And, you know, this is a field day for the false ego. You know, Kali Yuga is a false ego. It's like, yeah, you know, false ego reigns. So we don't like words like ritual, okay, because it evokes regularity and commitment, and everything regularity and commitment seems to be bottom of the list. Okay, even in employment, I remember, I think when I was growing up, and maybe some of you who are older also remember, it was actually something to be proud of and desired to have a steady, regular job and stay in a job for a long time. Now it's almost looked as suffocating, right? You know, people do like probation, you know, they'll be on probation or they'll have a short-term contract. And I will have young people come to me and say, you know, yeah, so I had this job, I did it for like 6 months. And I said, oh, so are you going to, did they offer you the job for permanent? They go, yeah, they did. But me and all my friends, we just said no. We're like, we don't want to be tied down. We want to be free. We want to explore. I was like, oh, okay. But, you know, then there's also security and like, you know, I mean, you know, maybe they're looking at us going, yeah, that's your Maya. That's your illusion. Being tied down, you'll be attached, you know. I'm like, yeah, but you're attached to independence. It's like there's attachment to something. So we are in a world where we don't like, you know, we're scared of regulation and commitment. And I think some of that is also to do with leadership failing us and authority failing us in the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. But this ritual aspect, if we look at it, what does it mean? It means commitment. And when we commit to something, it means we are regularly endeavoring. And when we regularly endeavor, then inevitably there is regular result, right? Consistent endeavor leads to consistent result. So in this way, what are the two key things that Srila Prabhupada says about the commitment and regularity aspect that facilitates deity worship or is a sign? He gives this away directly and indirectly. One of the things he says about Samartha Brahmins and their approach to deity worship, I mean, that they're not so clean or regular, right? Now, there is also the aspect that the regularity may be irregular because somebody's at such a high level of deity worship that their deity worship is driven by a bhav, and quite literally their external activities line up with their internal activities. But for ourselves, we try to use everything we can until we're at that stage. And even at that stage, one aligns with scripture to set an example. We take shelter of two things, being clean and being regular. And of course, this is adjusted according to temple standards and home standards, but whatever minimum standard you have at home, stick to your minimum standard of regularity and cleanliness. That's what Krishna reciprocates with, that you always stick to your minimum standard. Then everything on top helps. How does this help? One is it brings us to this mode of goodness. Mode of goodness is a segue into mode of transcendence. It's not the same thing, but it's a segue. It's a bridge to devotion. It just makes everything that much easier. Okay? You can't pass water through a pipe that's blocked. So if deity worship is a portal to Krishna's heart, think of cleanliness and regularity as something that keeps the channel clean. Okay? It keeps those channels, that connection clean. And of course, then there's so many other aspects which are more internal. So I just will speak for two more minutes and then maybe we can open up to people's pastimes, comments and questions. So two aspects I wanted to look at was the power of the worshipper and the power of the beholder. Just coming back to this point, I have no doubt that there's many people in this room who have had varying experiences with the deity. You come before the same deity, and sometimes you will find, my gosh, it's as if Krishna is standing right before me. I can feel a personal connection. And other times you come before the deity, you come before Krishna, and you feel like he's not there. Other times you feel like you're not there, right? I'm here, but I'm not here. My mind and my heart are elsewhere. See, these two aspects of the congregation or the visitors and the person worshipping the deity are very, very powerful in terms of determining on a more subtle level whether and how open the channels, the deity serves as an open channel to Krishna's heart. So the pujaris, with their internal and external cleanliness and regularity and devotion, invite the Lord. They invite the Lord. The Lord doesn't come on demand by mantra. He doesn't. No, he's not Netflix that he's on demand. Okay, you put in your passcode and there he is. Okay, he has a heart. And the heart responds to desire. You want me here, I'll come. You don't want me here, you are thinking about what you're doing next, I won't come so much. But then if there's somebody who's there, who really has a lot of devotion, they may not even have direct contact with the deity. Maybe externally they're not even clean. But internally, there's so much desiring to see and serve Krishna. And maybe not even the deity itself, maybe their mood throughout the day is, how can I be of service? How can I be of service to the devotees? How can I be of service to Krishna? Or how can I reveal my mind in a confidence? Which Krishna's like, oh, there's somebody who wants me. I will reveal myself to them. Okay, so in this way, deity worship is very powerful. We need strong pujaris, internally and externally. And we need strong congregation, both. Because both the congregation activate the potency of the deity and the pujari does. And in this way, Lord Chaitanya, because he, like I said, he has maximum God potency and he has maximum devotee potency. So when he visited all these temples, by his devotion, he allowed the Lord's potency to re-manifest in all the deities, okay? To re-manifest. And in all the worshippers. And in all the worshippers. Because it describes here how he danced and performed kirtan in ecstasy. When all the people saw him, they were converted into devotees of Lord Krishna. Like it was, that love was contagious, literally spilling over. You know how Mahavishnu lies in the causal ocean just by his breathing, his respiration. You know, when we respire, many germs leave us and many germs come back in. Okay, when Mahavishnu, you know, he respires, many universes manifest from him and many universes come in. When Lord Chaitanya sings and dances, then bhakti emanates from him. And so this overflows. And you know, when I was walking into the temple and the kirtan, you could hear it from outside. It's just, the whole atmosphere was different. I just got a big smile on my face. You know, it just changes the heart. It makes you very attracted. So there was no philosophical discussion. You know, these Brahmins weren't given a lecture on how to worship the deity properly. They just saw Lord Chaitanya and they felt everything. And they were just inspired. Right? When we're inspired like this, this movement in the heart, this comes from purity. And so when Lord Chaitanya was visiting these temples, not only did he revive the devotion in the pujaris, not only did he revive and instill devotion in the hearts of those who may have been following other paths, but he also activated and re-energized and reopened portals. A lot of Lord Chaitanya's service to us, and I say this with embarrassment, yes, the Lord serves us, was to reopen all the portals in this world. Some he did himself, and many he did through the six Goswamis and the devotees that came afterwards. The portals of Dham. Okay, he opened up Vrindavan. The portals of deities. The portals of the mantra. The most important portal, sound vibration. Okay, all of these are portals to the Lord's heart, portals to our identity, portals to our relationship with him. So there are so many different wonderful pastimes at these various different temples. I'm sure devotees here have had wonderful experiences as well. I mean, this just this even today's verse, the last one we ended on, verse 72, in the purport describes how two birds come there daily to receive food from the temple priest, and it is claimed that they have been coming since time immemorial. You know, the power of these portals, whether it's dham, whether it's deity, whether it's sound vibration, is not limited by anything in this material world. And those two birds are testimony. The flowers we offer are testimony, because Prabhupada says flowers that are offered to the Lord. And actually this is in Shastra, a flower that's offered to the Lord, the plant that the flower came from gets a human birth immediately. You know, these birds, they benefit. The birds aren't versed in Shastra. They don't haven't been initiated, and they're not wearing triple neck beads around their neck or wearing tilak. You know, but then yet they are simply by taking the prasad from the deity, you know, eating Krishna's remnants. This is what we do in the spiritual world, we eat Krishna's remnants. You've all seen this beautiful picture of Krishna sitting surrounded by the cowherd boys. Right, he's feeding one, they're feeding him. Sometimes they'll try and put a flower in his mouth instead of a laddu. You know, they're sharing remnants. Why? The boundary, where there's complete love, the heart knows no boundaries. So Lord Chaitanya reactivated all of these portals for us so that every living entity, regardless of form, qualification, color, caste, creed, gender, can remember and experience their loving relationship with the Lord, and also become a portal to the Lord's heart themselves. He didn't want us to just stop at being followers. And Prabhupada makes this very clear. He doesn't just want us all to just stop at being followers. In fact, follow to the point, like Lord Chaitanya was such a good follower, that follow to the point where bhakti is spilling over so much that we can somehow or another even become a small, tiny little portal, you know, a teeny weeny one, still let something through, right? It's still useful in the big scheme of things. Tribhuvanath Prabhu would describe it as, yes, you know, when there's a fire, it's all hands on deck. We may not be the fireman with the big hose pipe and the big truck and the unlimited amounts of water, but we all have buckets. You could all fill your bucket and try and put the fire out. So I would, if you devotees don't mind, like to hear from, because I guess we don't always share these kinds of things in such an open forum, but does anybody have either something they've heard or they've experienced themselves which has really given them faith that, yeah, Krishna's there. Krishna's receiving what I'm asking or what I'm telling him. Or Krishna's reciprocating. Anybody have pastimes they want to share? Time to wake up now. Please don't feel shy, and don't feel shy about getting details wrong. It's the spirit of the sharing that really changes people's hearts. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the class. I was once praying to Lord Ram. Oh, I was like, oh, please just, I have so many anarthas, just shoot me with the arrows, shoot all the anarthas with my arrows. And the next day, one devotee, Vishishta Prabhu, he got like some paraphernalia from the deities, and it was a strap from Lord Ram's bow, or some, yeah, one of the things. So that was really nice.
Like, amazing.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much. That's really beautiful. Yeah, thank you. Anyone else? Yes, Mataji. Can we send the mic over there? One second, please share on the mic so devotees online can hear also.
Hare Hare Krishna. I came from a distant temple, and we have not that big deities at the temple, but when we have feasts, like for the great opportunities, the next day the buttons on the clothes of the deities are not going to. Yeah.
Amazing.
So, and Pujaris said that for the, actually many times that after waking the deities after the night, their bodies are not cold, they are just as warm as of a child.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing, yeah.
That's so powerful. So we have one devotee, he's describing how he saw direct reciprocation through a devotee, and then there's other devotees who see and experience a change in the actual physical form of the deity itself. Yes, sometimes they get bigger, sometimes their temperature changes. Yeah, it's very powerful. Anyone else? Mohan?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Just in regard of those, I was online hearing, you know, he said, where's mentioned those two birds in the Shiva temple, isn't it? You mentioned these two birds.
Two birds, that, yes.
This is in Shiva temple. Mm-hmm. They actually don't come anymore.
Oh.
About maybe 20 years ago, they suddenly stopped to come. And it's interesting, I was hearing class once I was in Vrindavan about maybe 6-7 years ago or something. So one devotee told us very interesting thing regarding to that. They said that they had kind of parikram around this temple. It was big, big, huge harinam, very powerful harinam with gornitai deities or maybe picture or whatever. And they saw these two eagles, whatever, two birds. They came and they flew around three times. And then they just disappeared. And nobody saw them in the temple anymore, in that very place. And people are very sad because, you know, they come here for, they said, for ages. They said that coming. There is even one carving in this, is a carving or kind of painting in this temple, which is from 7th century. And they're showing the same birds coming. And Pujari is feeding them. So it's very, maybe it's connected with this anyway, but they had ashram gornitai, and that's it, they disappear. Somebody said that even that they are Jatayu and his brother, even. There's many stories about that. They cursed three times, take birth as a real birth for duration of entire yoga or something like that. So interesting story that, yeah. Very, very, very phenomenal, actually, and just something to share.
Maybe they got everything they needed from the Harinam, right? And no longer needed to stay as birds. They're ready to be actually free and fly away, because birds are seen as free, aren't they? Thank you for sharing that. Thank you, Prabhu. Mohan, do you want to ask or say, share your story?
Hey, Krishna. Usually I like to listen to class and not make any comment, but it's nice, good question. Without revealing the personality, a few years ago, one devotee passed away. And when he passed away, I was really concerned. And so in my sleep, it's like the deities actually left the altar to visit him.
Oh, wow.
So I dreamt about that, and that was really nice. And a question that I have is that, it's like sometimes when, at least personally, me speaking, in the beginning it starts out as that you have a very interesting relationship with their lordships. But then over time, I don't know what it is, it's that sometimes you may find that you're losing that.
Mm.
How do you kind of revive that?
That's a very good question. Because I think it happens to most devotees. I mean, Prabhupada recommended everybody engage in deity worship. Especially if you're living at home, you know, if you live in the temple, of course you have, this is your home. So the temple deities are. You know, it's your own personal, I guess, lounge in an altar. In the home, we have our miniature versions, and then we're mini temple presidents of our home. If you run your home properly, it's like a temple. So regularity. And the thing is with regularity is it provides an anchor for when our taste isn't there. Okay? Now, we have this... unfortunate position of becoming over-familiar. Now, with human beings, I can't help it, but it's bringing in some psychological stuff here. You're probably familiar with this idea of projection, right? That we project our past experiences and emotional feelings and perceptions on situations and people. But we generally do that where there's something that's familiar. So a really obvious example is our first authorities are our parents, so we learn so many things in our dynamic with our parents. We learn how to manage stress. We learn how authority and junior interact. We learn about respect. We learn about giving and receiving affection. And so what you find is then in your subsequent relationships with authority, whether that's bosses or gurus, shiksha gurus, diksha gurus, some of those dynamics you start to project, even if that person is nothing like the situation, but because they happen to be in a senior position, you will project those things. And over-familiarity makes it happen more. This is why we end up making offenses. The deity, in one sense, is, you know, the deity form of the Lord, in one sense, serves as an interface which is harder to become over-familiar with, because there's not really a lot we can project on the deity, because we are not like the deity, okay? We don't look anything like Krishna, at least not in these forms. And there's not really anything that mimics or replicates our past experiences. So in this way, we're protected. Krishna's given us one interface where the over-familiarity breeding contempt and offenses has a ceiling to it. Also then, we understand from Madhura Kadambini, you know, the especially offenseless chanting burns up Seva Aparad very quickly. Okay, it doesn't have leave so much of an impression. But when we are regular, okay, regardless of whether we're feeling it or not. And this applies to our japa as well. That regularity is our expression of love. Okay, often we assign love as it's a feeling. But love is action. Okay, if mothers only fed their children and when they were feeling it, most of us wouldn't have grown up. Okay, because I can tell you as a mother, you know, you're tired, you're hungry, you know, you haven't slept enough. If you're just like, but there's this love that comes that you do feel like feeding your child, even when you're tired and you're hungry, right? It's overpowers everything else. But sometimes that's not there. And some mothers will say, I feel lonely, I feel isolated, I don't feel emotionally connected to my child. I feel like a bad mum because I don't feel like doing these things. I'll do them, but that's their love in action, you know? So our love... expressing our love to Krishna, convincing him that we're determined this time to not turn away again, it's expressed in different ways at different stages. So until we actually experience and appreciate him more as a person and have real affection for him, until that affection has some steadiness, our practice has to have some steadiness. Okay, and that's our expression of love. That I'm going to do this for you in a committed way. And my love is that it doesn't matter whether I feel it or not. Right? My feelings are second. This is about you. Does that make sense? So if I've made a commitment to worship you every day, even if it's just one incense stick, I will do that every day. Even if I'm not feeling it, I will make time to do it. If I've made a commitment to every day, I'm going to sing. Then you make that, you follow it through, even if we don't feel like it. The process is so potent. Krishna is so kind. He's so kind. We're actually doing very little for what we're getting. Very little. And when we get, this is this thing of causeless mercy. There's two aspects to causeless mercy. One is that really there is nothing that qualifies us. There's no material circumstance that qualifies us to have bhakti bestowed in the heart. But the second aspect of causeless is that when bhakti starts to arise, real bhakti, one starts to really feel it, and it's more sustained, one realizes that all the effort they put in before that at the time felt so hard and felt like such an austerity. Like, oh my gosh, I did hardly anything of what I've been given. And it feels causeless. And then the gratitude, you know, breaks open the banks of love, right? And so just... be regular, not because you're supposed to, not just because you're supposed to, but knowing that that regularity is an expression of love and it will invoke all the other elements of love. Is that okay? Do we have to stop? We have to stop. Does anybody else want to share any other pastimes? I always find these deity pastimes so inspiring. Smarhari.
Had a beautiful experience with Radhesham in Hungary. It was on Janmashtami in the evening, and it was the midnight arati. So everyone is there. Marge is doing the arati in big kirtan. And they asked me to go get something from Marge's house for March. And so I was thinking, oh, no. You know,
I want to be in the kirtan. Yeah.
It's like a 5-10 minute walk.
Yeah.
So you have to go there and come back. And then I started to think, actually, no, this is like serving the servant is the philosophy we should be. This is good. And I was singing a kirtan. Just singing to myself a kirtan. And then as I came back, I realized that I was singing the same tune, which is in the being sung in the thing, and yes. I was actually in sync. As I came closer, even the mantra was in sync. And then it was really special, like, wow, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So even though your body was away from the kirtan, the Lord kept your heart and your voice and your mind close. Yeah, Krishna does this, you know. Actually, Guru Maharaj said this in a podcast recently, that Krishna will bring you to your knees and beg. Because, you know, he explains how it's the hankering that purifies our heart. And so Krishna allows us, you know, we don't have to wait till Raganuga Bhakti to experience that hankering. Krishna arranges for it. Sometimes he pulls away to increase that hankering, to give us more taste. Because that hankering is purifying. Right, because what is it? It doesn't matter how successful, unsuccessful, strong, etc. you are. Ultimately, everything we do is driven by desire. Everything is driven by desire. Right, and of course, preceding desire is what we're exposed to, because we never desire anything we haven't been exposed to. But desire trumps everything. It trumps all limitations and rules and previous habits. These special interactions with the deity are so important to hear, because deity worship is not culturally familiar. And you know, there was a time where you'd expect deity worship to be culturally familiar even to Indians, but even these days it's not culturally familiar to a lot of Indians, right? And it can feel a little bit alien. But when we hear these pastimes, oh, you know, actually the body of the deity changes. Oh, actually, you know, flowers fall down, or the deity responds based on how you've cooked. Sometimes there's things missing from the plate. Sometimes it will throw your plate away, quite literally, because you've cooked it in the wrong mood. You know, these things, they show you that actually all the portals that Krishna's sent us and opened up for us to be able to connect with his heart, they're alive to the degree that we want to connect. So I could sit here and hear your pastimes. But maybe your stomachs are rumbling for the remnants of the Lord now. So thank you so much. Hare Krishna.